Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll get a report from a die-in that happened in a Chase Bank branch in downtown Boulder yesterday. It was part of a day of action targeting JP Morgan Chase for the bank's continued investment in and funding of fossil fuel projects. Then, our relationship with food. Juliette Whitman has written about this for years in local publications like Westward magazine. She has a new book out. It's a novel and it's called Stocker's Kitchen. She'll speak about it tonight at the Boulder Bookstore. Then we'll hear how people's citizenship applications are being denied by the federal government because they're employed in the legal cannabis industry here in Colorado. We'll get analysis of that with Leland Rucker, who's a senior editor at Sensi magazine. John Lendorf will then join us live in the studio for the latest food news on Radio Nibbles. After headlines from the BBC, we continue our coverage of the Conference on World Affairs, which is happening this week on the CU Boulder campus. Today, we'll broadcast a panel that was actually recorded yesterday morning, and it was moderated by KGNU's Sam Fuqua, and it takes a look ahead to the 2020 elections. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Hannah Lee Myers.
Wednesday, a jury awarded $3.6 million to a Colorado woman who claimed deputies in Fremont County used excessive force when they arrested her while naked and later shocked her with a stun gun while she was restrained. The Denver Post reports the jury awarded grandmother Carolyn O'Neill the settlement, saying, when the incident happened in 2014, the Fremont deputies violated her right to privacy, used excessive force, and retaliated against her. At the time of the incident, O'Neill was living at a Canyon City sober living facility, and the police were called by a staff member saying O'Neill was distraught that her mother was dying, and there was fear she may hurt herself. When police knocked on her door, O'Neill told police she wouldn't open the door because she was naked and about to take a bath, she also had no intention of hurting herself. The Fremont police then entered anyway, tackled her, handcuffed her, took her outside covered only in a blanket, and she was later restrained to a chair for 4 hours, only covered by a blanket that she says exposed her repeatedly. She was later tased twice when she would not submit to police instructions. Prosecutors later charged O'Neill with resisting arrest and disorderly conduct. A judge dismissed the charges, finding the deputies did not have reason to arrest her. Fremont's sheriff's office has faced multiple deputy brutality lawsuits in recent years, including one that led to a sheriff resigning due to staff misconduct allegations. Wednesday, the University of Colorado Regents unanimously selected Mark Kennedy, a former Minnesota congressman, as the sole finalist in the search for the new university president. Kennedy will, if formally elected, replace outgoing CU President Bruce Benson. The Daily Camera reports some members of the CU community are raising concerns about the former Republican congressman's votes in the early 2000s against gay marriage and to restrict abortion rights. Wednesday, a CU regent told the Daily Camera she and her fellow regents did not discuss Kennedy's congressional voting record with him during his interview with the board, and she had been unaware of it. Under state law, a finalist or finalists for the position of university president must be publicly named for at least 2 weeks before officially being hired as president. The Board of Regents at CU will schedule a vote on whether to hire Kennedy afterwards. More than 600 flights were canceled at Denver International Airport yesterday. The Denver Post reports that 183 flights are canceled today and 44 flights are delayed. DIA officials have asked airline passengers to check their flight status before going to the airport and to give themselves more time to get to the airport because of poor driving conditions. Local school districts are open today, but some schools are on a delayed start. Some Denver public schools will begin later than usual, as will schools in Aurora, Littleton, and Douglas County. Morning snow will be clearing up this morning across the Front Range, with partly sunny skies on the forecast for this afternoon, with a high somewhere around 44 degrees. There is another chance for a little snow tonight and a low tonight around 23 degrees. Slight chance for some more snow on and off through Saturday. 60-degree weather will be back on the Front Range by Sunday. It's currently around 25 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Hannah Lee Myers.
It's 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Yesterday, around the country, 22 actions took place targeting Chase Banks over the company's ongoing financing of fossil fuel projects and investment in the fossil fuel industry. In Colorado, the weather didn't deter protesters who took action in Colorado Springs and in Boulder. In Boulder, a group of environmental activists staged a die-in in the foyer of the downtown Chase Bank on Wednesday morning as part of a National Day of Action targeting JP Morgan Chase for its continued investment in and funding of fossil fuel projects. Deb McNamara with 350 Colorado says that JP Morgan Chase is in fact the largest funder of fossil fuel projects in the world.
And there was a recent report released just a couple of weeks ago highlighting the fact that JP Morgan Chase has funded more than $196 million worth of money to fossil fuel projects, and that is only since the 2015 Paris Agreement. So we're here to question why it is that Jamie Dimon, the head of JP Morgan Chase, has signed on or agree, you know, supports the Climate Paris Agreement, and yet the bank is continuing to fund these extreme fossil fuel projects to the tune of $196 million in the last couple of years.
I know that Chase is the target of today's action, but are there other financial institutions that you're also paying attention to?
Yes, definitely. So the report that was released a few weeks ago also highlighted Wells Fargo, which is the second leading financier of fossil fuel projects, and Bank of America as well is shortly thereafter.
So this is a nationwide day of action. So what exactly is happening around the country?
So there are at least 22 actions happening around the country, similar to this, where we will be going to different banks and asking for a change in funding practices. We want the climate disaster to stop financing the climate disaster. And so there are actions of all kinds. There will be direct actions at banks. There are also educational events happening. People are handing out educational information at banks. I know in Denver and Colorado Springs, here in Colorado, there are a couple of actions happening too.
I know this is just one component in the broader fight around climate catastrophe and what's happening in terms of how it's being funded, the fossil fuel industry. But at a state level, there are changes happening too. I mean, what are your thoughts on the recent legislation, say Senate Bill 181? And first of all, there's been a huge backlash against that by the oil and gas industry, not surprisingly, but even some environmental groups who say it's just a drop in the bucket and it's not enough.
I can speak to 181 in the sense that we were certainly involved in it, but actually what's top of mind right now for me that relates more closely to this defunding climate disaster issue is what just happened on Monday with a House bill, it was 1270, which had to do with our state pension fund, PARA, and that bill would have required PARA to do a climate-related financial risk assessment, and unfortunately the House Finance Committee voted almost unanimously against that study. And that study would have really helped to bring shed more light on the investments that PARA is making in the fossil fuel industry, which is to the tune of $1.5 billion or more. And so I find it disheartening that we have this opportunity to take a deeper look, and that decision was just made a few days ago.
Activists blocked the entrance to the downtown Boulder Chase Bank with signs saying Chase closed due to climate disaster. A group of 10 other activists staged a die-in in the foyer of the bank. Having been denied access to the bank itself, they lay on the ground for 11 minutes, signifying that we are in the 11th hour of a climate crisis and the 11 years that climate scientists say is the time frame where we must reduce fossil fuel usage drastically if we are to avert climate catastrophe. Micah Parkin of 350 Colorado read a letter to the Chase local branch manager saying that JP Morgan Chase must take responsibility for being the top financier of climate disaster.
And we've come and we've delivered letters multiple times to JP Morgan Chase, and unfortunately they continue to fund even the expansion of fossil fuels.
Nishama Abraham, a customer of Chase Bank in Boulder and co-founder of the Athena Gold Holdings Group, a $200,000 investment fund that supports sustainable activities like regenerative farming, read out a statement saying that she was divesting the $200,000 fund from Chase because of their support for the fossil fuel industry.
Well, I'm doing this on behalf of actually three managing members and six investors across the country. We are removing an investment fund out of Chase JP Morgan because investing in fossil fuels does not align with our values. We support things that are sustainable, like renewable energy, and it's our way of aligning our money with our values to support the future of people's good health and the planet.
This action was part of a national day of action with more than 22 other events taking place at Chase banks around the country. Voices from the action that took place at the Chase Bank in downtown Boulder yesterday as part of a National Day of Action targeting JP Morgan Chase over their ongoing investments in the fossil fuel industry and their funding of fossil fuel projects. You can see photos and a video from yesterday's action in Boulder. It's online at news.kgnu.org. Juliet Whitman has written about food and culture for years in local publications like Westward magazine, and she has a new book out. It's a novel called Stocker's Kitchen. She'll speak about it tonight at the Boulder Bookstore. The book is set in a restaurant with a variety of characters from different backgrounds working with the titular protagonist, who himself comes from a very working class background and ends up in a very high end restaurant. I asked Juliet Whitman about this intersection of class and food, which appears as one of the themes in the book.
I'm glad you noticed that, because I'm very conscious of class. And this is, I'm also, as anyone who sees my Facebook page will tell you, intensely political. And always ranting about something. And Stocker's Kitchen is not very political at all. But I'm very aware of class. And I like that Stocker is kind of funky and that he doesn't kowtow to, and he's not knocked out, or he's not looking for Michelin stars. He's very down to earth. And I think that's something with Angela, you know, and the brother who's been in prison, and the wife who works at Walmart, and the way they eat. I get a little irritated when people say, oh, shopping at the farmer's market is just for rich people, although I admit the food is pricey, because the food I get at the farmer's market is so much more like what I had as a child. And believe me, we were not wealthy. My mother was an immigrant and a widow, alone in a strange city, raising two children. But cheese that had been aged and had flavor wasn't a gourmet item. It was what you had.
Well, now getting back to our dysfunctional relationship with food, it's so much cheaper to buy unhealthy processed food than it is to buy healthy ingredients to actually make your own food. To make your own dinner. I mean, it seems like we have just completely scrambled and ruined the food distribution system. And then in terms of the cost index of what we're paying for, it's not reflected in what we're paying for.
Yeah, if you've got a family with two or three kids and both parents are working, it's costly in terms of time, it's costly in terms of money. And if you want to feed all five of you for one meal, you'd better stop at McDonald's. I mean, that's where you can get enough food to fill everyone up for what you can afford. You know, just buying bags of plums and, you know, it is going to break you. So, yeah, it's very messed up. I think Michael Pollan, I think he's kind of elitist in the way he thinks about his own life and food and some, but nonetheless, the way he analyzes how we've come to this place, where, yes, it's because they're very heavy subsidies for all kinds of stuff we don't need. So we're subsidizing soy, we're subsidizing corn. Well, you've got a flood of that stuff, so you've got to find things to put them in. So you're making these protein bars and this and that, and to absorb all that stuff that was never a good thing to grow in the first place. And you've got monocropping. Oh, don't let's start.
But Juliet Whitman, who has been writing about the local food scene and the local theatre scene for many, many years in a variety of local publications, including Westward, will speak about her latest book, the novel Stocker's Kitchen. She'll be at the Boulder Bookstore this evening at 7:30. This event was originally scheduled in March, but that was the same day that the bomb cyclone hit the area. So that led to the cancellation of that original event. It's been rescheduled to this evening. It's at 7:30 at the Boulder Bookstore. It is 8:21. You're listening to KGNU. Leland Rucker is the senior editor at Sensi Magazine, and he joins us on Thursday mornings to talk about the latest news in cannabis. Today, we're going to look at some of the ripple effect of the ongoing federal prohibition of marijuana. Even though cannabis is legal in the state of Colorado, the reports coming out that people are having their immigration applications denied or severely compromised because they're employed in the legal cannabis industry here in Colorado. This is a story that's emerged in the last week or so.
That's exactly the truth. It's something that Mayor Michael Hancock, the Denver mayor, he's sent a letter to Attorney General William Barr to rethink this citizenship policies, because at least two, we don't know of any others, but at least two legal immigrants in Denver have been denied the opportunity to become naturalized citizens because they work in the marijuana industry here in Colorado, where it's legal, where they're doing something legal. And the mayor said in a letter to Barr, he said, you know, they've graduated from our schools, they paid their taxes, they're working to achieve the American dream and complying with the processes in place to become a part of our society, but were denied naturalization solely because of their cannabis industry employment. One of those people is Oswaldo Barrientos, who was brought to the U.S. from El Salvador as an infant and was granted a green card when he was 13. That was 17 years ago. And he's fluent in English, says he has no criminal history, pays taxes, he graduated from high school, began working in the marijuana industry in 2014 because he heard about the medical effects and his mother had skin problems. And during an interview in November, he says that the guy who he was talking with, the citizenship person, said that he focused on his job with this state-licensed grow company, and weeks later, he got a letter from the Immigration Services denying him because of that job. And this is the interesting part. The U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services defend their denials. And this is exactly what they said. When adjudicating applicants for citizenship, the agency is required to apply federal law. We appreciate the candor of applicants who provide the requisite documentation illustrating legal purchase and possession under state law. However, as a federal agency, we are legally unable to make special considerations in these cases unless or until federal law is changed. Ouch! That's really something. Yet we appreciate you being honest, but you can't become a citizen for that.
So are immigration attorneys now advising clients who are seeking naturalization, if they've been here legally, to either not work in the cannabis industry or certainly not declare that they're working in the cannabis industry? Although, I mean, your tax records would show where you work, so.
Exactly. Well, there have been things in the past. The Denver nonprofit that focuses on immigrant and refugee communities paired with the state's largest marijuana trade group for a video back in 2017. There was another one in 2018 from the Immigrant Legal Resource Center. But most immigration attorneys simply advise, if you're working in the marijuana industry, don't apply for citizenship, even with the qualifications, for instance, that Barrientos had. He says, Barrientos' lawyer said, frankly, these are the people we want to be citizens, and the U.S. government is telling them no. We don't know how many people have been denied on the same issue. These are just ones that have come forward. And Barrientos says that he plans to appeal the denial of his application, and his attorneys are also considering his options in federal court. In the meantime, he's following their advice not to leave the country and keep his job.
People can read more about that online at news.kgnu.org and catch all the archives of Sensi Magazine there as well. And of course, you can catch Sensi Magazine online at sensimag.com. And Leland Rucker joins us Thursday mornings. Thanks, Leland.
Thank you.
Time now for Radio Nibbles.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to Gravy Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Everybody eats on Thursday mornings. And today we're talking about eating, but also drinking. And it's one of my favourite beverages, John Lendorf, joining us now to talk about Boulder County's first coffee fest. It's happening this Saturday and Sunday in Lafayette and Erie.
And, you know, all the coffee nerds will be there. You know, they have a lot of words for, like, gatherings of different kinds of birds. A Congress of Penguins, I think. And that kind of, I'm not sure what a gathering of coffee nerds is, but I'm calling it
cappuccino.
I'm calling it a jitter.
Oh, there you go.
A jitter of coffee nerds. It's Boulder County has this incredible coffee culture, really wonderful roasters and baristas. They're all coming together for 2 days in Lafayette and then in Erie. And the first day, in Saturday at in Lafayette at the Arts Hub, they're going to show a film called Caffeinated. Makes sense. And it's a... It's a look inside craft coffee. But the biggest thing is that they're doing a brewing techniques demo. So they're going to take the same beans and use them to make French press, AeroPress, pour over, and drip. And finally, you can taste the difference, what those techniques mean, and whether you like it. And it'll change your whole perspective on how to make coffee. There'll also be tastings of coffee and, you know, tastes of different kinds of foods.
I do find people are quite attached to their own brewing technique and, dare I say, can get a little bit snobby if they discover, and I'm using those that word in air quotes here, a specific technique.
Well, they become evangelistic.
Exactly.
Like about... AeroPress, you know, unless you drink AeroPress, you're just not a worthy human being.
I've become a bit like that. We've started doing mocha pots on a stovetop.
Which is a stovetop espresso pot.
It's fabulous.
And generations of campers have loved that, actually. On Sunday, it takes place at Erie Coffee Roasters, which is in a hangar at Erie Airport. And you can actually watch the green beans get roasted to different levels and taste the difference that makes. And there's also going to be baristas there, so you can pick up a few skills. You know, I'm sure you need to work on your latte art, you know, with the leaves and the things on the top of the foam and all that stuff. And you can find out the difference between espresso and cortado and a flat white and all those things you see in coffee stores.
I can imagine the aroma is going to be incredible at that airport hangar in Erie on Sunday with all that coffee roasting.
Don't drink coffee before you go. And if you bring your mug, you get a dollar off on tickets.
Well, I know that you do have some tips here, just, you know, for general coffee making at home. The first one being it starts with the beans and just make sure you're using good beans.
Yeah, if you're getting a CSA, if you're sourcing organic, locally grown produce, you know, you might want to look into where your coffee beans come from. And if you're going to use K-cups, you know, use the refillable ones and use good coffee in that. Use filtered water. Don't use a spice grinder. Use a burr grinder.
A burr grinder being a specific coffee grinder.
It slices the beans. It doesn't turn them into cocoa powder, and then you get all the, you know, that gritty taste. Store it in the one thing I learned talking to people was, apparently freezing coffee beans does absolutely nothing to help make them last longer.
Because we freeze our coffee beans. Is it hurting them?
Doesn't hurt them.
It's a convenient place for just us to put them.
That's fine, but cool, dry, and airtight is the thing.
Well, aside from the coffee festival that's happening this Saturday and Sunday in Lafayette and Erie, there's also Alice Waters, the renowned chef. She's going to be in town. This is some news coming up for an event that's happening later in the year. This is in summer, in July, at the Slow Food Nation Sustainable Food Festival.
Alice Waters is one of the great heroes of sustainable food, American food, you know, really caused a revolution. She's going to be the headliner at the Slow Food Nations event, Sustainable Food Festival, July 19th to 21. She's like the Rolling Stones. You better go see her while you can. Tickets go on sale May 1st. That's Slow Food Nations in Denver.
Well, what's the best thing you've tasted lately?
I found these wonton wrappers in my freezer, and I had some leftover Sunday chicken dinner. I put that inside the wrappers and made wontons.
Yum, yum. Well, you can listen to archived radio nibbles at news.kgnu.org. Don't forget, The snow is still with us, so in terms of planting,
don't plant till Mother's Day.
You gotta eat if it chokes you,